Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
I'm on the stage. Every foul wicked spirit is the host, the Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of a on the Ooze. Right now.
On the Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into adversarial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now, onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downing, aka Boostino, and with me on the line is my co-host, the Dark Fool, Matt. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. You know, same old thing, different day. I got my coffee, I got my Monster, and I'm ready to rock this shit.
Alright, real quick, just so everybody knows, this is the 107th edition of the Ooze. So we got about four more until we hit our 111th show, and I think we're going to do something special for that.
Right on, man. Where exactly would that fall on, approximately?
Who's not? That's a good question. I'll have to open up a calendar and look. I haven't really counted at this point, but it looks like it'll be Zach's, or no, it'll actually be Jason Sorrell's show, I think, is what it would be. I mean, because today's the 107th, tomorrow's will be the 111th, or 108th. Next Friday will be the 109th. Next Saturday will be the 110th. And then the Outbreak Edition on Sunday will be the 111th. The only thing is, at this point, there is a small issue. I won't be here next weekend. So it's kind of interesting. I'll probably be able to catch and do the Sunday night show. But as far as the Friday and Saturday, well, no, I maybe won't even be able to do that. So we're going to actually have our 111th edition show without me there, so maybe that's what makes it special. I won't be there.
All right, so we'll coordinate, make plans around that. All right, thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, well, actually, we're gonna have to actually get together probably tomorrow and go over how the switchboard works and everything, because it's gonna be all you next week on Saturday, man. So
okay, all right, sounds like a plan.
So some old familiar faces in the chat room and some new faces too. So everybody welcome. I got to tell you, Matt, man, I mean, 90% of the reason why I even decided to go ahead and throw up today's topic was because it gave me the ability to put the title that I did there. I mean, it's not very often that I can, with a serious face, look at somebody or talk to somebody and say, my dick is bigger than yours. So.
Yeah, yours truly came up with that one. Excuse me. I kind of borrowed the title a little bit. As many people well know, I am a George Carlin fan, and in one of his routines, he talks about, the bigger dick foreign policy theory, and it goes something like, what? They have bigger dicks? Bomb them! And the rockets and the bullets and the bombs are all kind of shaped like dicks, so it all works out. And the reason I chose this topic and this show is because, well, I want to look at, I mean, especially within the left-hand path, you know as well as I do, there's a lot of infighting. And I want to look at, some of that is due to personality types. Some people are very much, take control, take the bull by the horns, take no bullshit kind of guys, and a lot of people are laid back. I fall under that category that are like, hey, whatever. You know, some things they may step up to the plate and be very controlling and dominating. Other things are like, they let slide. So I want to take a look at different personality traits, how that appears specifically within the left-hand path. But what's funny is, as I was preparing for the show, I had that in mind originally. I had the alpha male, the beta, the omega, all that stuff in mind. And then I realized, well, wait a minute, what about the Myers-Briggs personality test? What about the, you know, the old Greeks, you know, the sanguine melancholy? I mean, there's several different ways to look at that. Even if you look at the occultists and the New Agers, if you look at the people that, put heavy stock in astrology, you know? So there's a lot of ways to look at this one issue.
Right on. So, well, which way do you want to look at it? That's what I'm trying to figure out here.
Ah, let's cover all of them, man. I want to start with the whole alpha male thing. You know, alpha male, alpha female. But then I want to take it from there and look at other ways of seeing the same topic.
All right. Well, first, do you find any validity in the alpha male, alpha female, whatever you want to call it, generalization?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think they apply quite nicely. I mean, you see people in daily life that take on those personality traits. I mean, even if you go to work and you have to work with other people, you know, you can see the leaders and the take charge and people that are just like, you know, whatever. Other personality traits, I think, like within the workplace, label them as like A, B, C personalities. Others say it's like red, blue, green. I mean, just, you definitely see elements of what you can offer to people in different social and working environments.
Oh, I got to throw this out here, Matt, because you know how I am. But I mean, is thinking that you see some kind of a parallel between people that, I mean, may possibly be latently in everybody? You know, do you think that
Absolutely.
So you believe that there it's not just some coincidence or a collection of coincidences that's been labeled or pointed out. You believe that there's a solid difference between an alpha male and, let's say, a delta male.
Well, see, okay, now this might my answer might be dependent on two things. One, some people that see things in black and white, you know, might say, oh, I don't agree with what I'm about to say. And what I'm about to say is, you know, that might also be my personality type, which could be like an Omega or what have you. The answer is this. I see elements depending on what the person finds of value. Like, let's say, you know, like you and I take this show seriously, so we're going to step up to the plate and we're going to be alpha males and we're both going to be like, take control, but, you know, obviously you're the co-host, so I kind of have to take a step back. You know, I can't take control of the whole thing, so in that case, okay, I got a little bit of beta going on in there. So I don't see it as clearly black and white as some people would see it. I see it as kind of being all intermittent.
Yeah, see, to me, in my opinion, it's just an excuse for someone to run around being an asshole because they think they're entitled to it. They can say, oh, I'm an alpha male, and that excuses asshole-like tendencies. I just don't see any kind of validity in that. You know, somebody can be very passive and not stick up for themselves and call themselves a whatever. I don't even know what the fuck it would be. A beta, I guess, would be the personality type. I don't even know. To me, it's just an excuse. It's a cop-out. It's another way to group. You know, it's another way to group what we see as commonalities, what we imagine are commonalities. And, you know, that those commonalities now offer some kind of a crutch for a specific type of behavior that we're endorsing. So that's just my take on the whole alpha male, beta male fucking thing. I call bullshit. I think it's just a cop-out.
I like that. I like that. In fact, I would have to agree to an extent with that because, I mean, a lot of people will say, well, you know what, I'm very take charge, I'm an alpha male. And that's, you know, you've seen it as well as I have within certain social networks, how people just kind of just throw that out there. It's like, well, no, you should probably just, you know, probably instead of opening your mouth, just shut the fuck up and listen and be a little bit more passive, you know what I mean? But, yeah, I definitely have seen that where people use it as a crutch. And the biggest one I see, which is kind of funny because it's going through a major change at this time, is astrology. You know, people that put a major emphasis on, well, I'm a Taurus, and a Taurus acts this way, or, yeah, well, I'm a Gemini, and a Gemini acts this way. It's like, So what do you do when somebody introduces the 13th sign, you know, the Ophiuchus, and just throws the entire thing out of whack? It's like your crutch is gone.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what to me, see, it's more of like an esoteric measuring tool, the whole astrology thing, than it is an absolute hardcore defined. I mean, most people who are into astrology, you know, found out about it when they were really young, you know. They had the little horoscope reading on the same page as the fucking comics here in this particular area. So when I was a kid, I used to, you know, go through the funnies, and in the funnies I would run across the horoscope. So of course I'd look to see what it said, and it would give a little advice. And as I got older, I started to explore, and I found this particular archetype of a personality trait, and I think it's more was meant to, you know, give you something to work towards and develop than it was to absolutely define yourself by. So.
Right, right. And yeah, and that's the thing that I see with all these personality traits. And you bring up something very interesting, just occurred to me right now. With these personality types, when you fall back on them and say, well, I'm a this and I'm a that, you know, how much of that is, you know, being, especially when I relate this show, when I brought it up within personality types and left-hand path is very individualistic. It's like, well, if you're going to be an alpha male just like everybody else, where's the individual in that? Where is you, you know, within all these generalizations and the categorizations?
Right. Well, it's funny. It's a funny condition man has, because man has to define himself. A matter of fact, I think, you know, some people may come to an ultimate definition of themselves, but I believe for the most part, people spend their entire lives struggling to define themselves, and you know that's kind of a shame, because we already sort of understand who we are. It's just finding the made of thought forms and vocabulary that attaches to that, you know, to be able to give yourself a general external examination, you know, to be able to put yourself down on paper. You know, it requires that you are able to, you know, develop definitions of yourself. And, you know, I think that fails, because as the years go by, I know that, you know, at some point, certain things that I thought were, I don't know, deeply defining of me are no longer are existent, or, in fact, I'm the polar opposite of what I once was. So.
Yeah, and that's very interesting, man. I mean, it's funny, like, especially as we grow older, age has a lot to do with our personality types. And what, you know, like when we're younger, we may be very, like, dominating and controlling, but when we get older, it's like, yeah, you let a lot of shit slide, you know? So there's also that to consider as well.
Right, right on. So, all right, we've hit those two things. Now, left-hand path. You know, I understand that there are multiple definitions for this thing, this description we're trying to use. They all seem to have one common factor, individuality. And when you try to make a generalization about yourself and then at the same time pull the individuality card, I think you sort of fail, you know, you By giving yourself any kind of a descriptor that someone else may share, if it's a lone descriptor, well, you've kind of, in a sense, disconnected yourself from being individualized. Now, I know this might be kind of hard for some people to wrap their mind around, but, you know, the mere taking of a title that somebody else has is showing some kind of congruence with notions associated to that. So for me, I think this is one of the reasons why in ancient times, when occultism was really practiced and not this e-occultism that we have today, you know, they didn't have to have those titles and things, and they were free to explore these archetypes and stuff and you know, use whatever, you know, whatever aspects of it they felt worked well within their own personal paradigm. And, you know, in that manner, it became kind of a free form. But now you see that, you know, people have to pull banners, and I'm honestly, I'm no better. You know, obviously, I probably tell people I'm a Satanist. I tell people, you know, I'm an idealist. I tell people I'm an iconoclast. You know, all of that stuff. I have a definition for myself going all the way through that I share to use to try to relate who I am instead of just giving people the ability to experience me, which is what I really should be doing.
Right. I mean, and along those same lines, you know, there's only so much of a generalization you can give, because then people also have to categorize you, you know, with where you fall. I mean, especially when you're making first impressions, you know, you kind of say, oh, well, I'm like this and I'm like that. You know, you're using broad, you're painting with a broad brush, but you also, you know, there's a delicate balance there with what you said. You know, like, well, this is me, but, you know, you figure out the rest.
Right. Well, you know, you can give indicators. You can, you know, set parameters, so to speak, but ultimately it's up to the person experiencing you. There's this old saying, and I don't know where I got it from, really, but there are three things that every person is: what they think they are, what other people think they are, and what they really are. And I think that holds completely true.
Well, that's interesting. Well, again, I mean, these are, like, again, this is a broad brush painting, isn't it? As I was doing research for the show, it was even broader when you look at how many different personality types you've got. I mean, there's so many ways of describing one thing. But until you actually, you know, experience for yourself, hang out, spend some time, you know, you get the full totality in your mind doesn't, again, regardless of labels.
Matt, I'm not sure if it's you or me, but you broke up real bad on my end here, man.
Okay, yeah, I figured that might happen. It might cut out. Can you hear me now, yeah?
Yeah, you're good again.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said before, it's just basically painting with a broad brush. And your mind can also fill in the gaps, and your mind is what goes beyond the categorizations.
Right.
I mean, you could fit it into a category, but when you experience it, that goes beyond the categorization process.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In fact, I would say that experience itself is tantamount or paramount to any descriptor that you can give to it. If you can describe something as feeling good, well, it probably feels a lot better than good. But, you know, that's the only word that you can come up with at that point in time to describe it. You know, you could say something is salty, but how do you describe the degree of saltiness that touches your tongue? You don't. So I know we're ending up way off of what we were trying to talk about here, but what I'm...
Right, we're kind of leading into the hard question again.
Yeah, well, everything kind of points back to that. So, you know, it's funny that these parallels are drawn and everything. It was really interesting yesterday. I don't know if anybody actually heard yesterday's show, but I was really trying to work towards, you know, getting some common descriptors of the archetype of Satan up on the show. And it was funny because I couldn't come up with any that were, I don't know, original in comparison to stuff that I've read over the past 20 years, you know, 20, 30 years, whatever it's been that I've been aware of the mythical character Satan. So, you know, it's kind of fascinating because it in my mind shows the limits of my ability to describe something as I experience it. So,
right. And just on a side note, I have a lot of downloads to do. I'll probably wait till about summertime when I have a little bit more free time. But, yeah, I mean, quite an archive we got, you know, going through all of these episodes.
It's 107 of them after today's show ends, man. So,
no, 111 coming up, man.
Yeah.
Great. Quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. Another little accomplishment. By the end of this month, we should have pushed well over 4,000 listens for the month. So we're on our way, man.
Cool. And speaking of the show's topic, My Dick is Bigger Than Yours, I want to gear more towards how, you know, different personality types, whatever they may be, conflict. I mean, based on, I would like to ask you, based on what you've seen, how do you see these different personalities get in the way? I mean, it may be about topics, yes, but I mean, most times you can see that it's clearly, well, this person is more relaxed and this person is more, you know, structured and rigid.
I'm not really sure what you're asking me, man. It's obvious that, well, to me, it's obvious that when you put any number of individual entities, units together that are all, I don't know, the same species or whatever, but they have their own individual characteristics, there's going to be some that, you know, they connect really well and they, you know, it's a very good relationship, and there are going to be others that really conflict, and then there are going to be those that are tolerable, and then those that completely aren't, you know, things that you just can't stand. So
you wouldn't use any indicators like Alpha, Omega, or Taurus, Gemini. You wouldn't use any of those to describe some reasons why they might conflict, would you?
I personally, the only indicator that I might use as to why those conflict is the definitions that people place upon themselves. The indicators that they put on themselves may give the potential for them to conflict with other people and what indicators that they've placed on themselves. For instance, you know, a Satanist might not get along too well with a Wiccan because this particular Satanist thinks that it's, a cotton candy religion and it's all fluffy bunny Christianity with a little touch of evil to make it interesting. And meanwhile, the Wiccan just wants to hug him, and that's going to be annoying. But it's his indicators about himself that tell him what he dislikes about the, you know, the Wiccan right there, and then the Wiccan, of course, is going to look at him and go, well, you're a narrow-minded, judgmental asshole, and he may be cool with wearing that crown, you know, and really, honestly, there's nothing wrong with either one behaving that way, because this is how they define themselves. The question is, do you allow your definitions to rule you, yeah, and that's really what it comes down to, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer either which way.
That's a very, very interesting perspective, because okay, you're looking at people's, you're finding out what makes them tick, like what system they are using before you come to a final conclusion, if there is a final conclusion to be reached. You're looking at how they operate and what systems they use, and not just within like religious or social paradigms, but also as far as like, do they buy into these systems of personality types, and how does that conflict with this other person and how they perceive? So you're looking at different perspectives from the inside rather than just generalizing yourself and using your own system.
Right. I've found 9 times out of 10 that people will tell themselves before they even get into a conflict with somebody, I'm going to conflict with this person because they are this. My brother and I actually do it all the time. My brother, at the age of 14, decided to become a vegan. He's now 31 years old, and, well, he's a vegetarian, so he's peeled back the restrictions that he places upon himself. However, I myself, I'm omnivore with, a heavy leaning towards carnivore. I do like my fruits and vegetables, don't get me wrong, but meat is definitely where it's at in terms of enjoyment for me. So,
well, meat is also, omnivores have been scientifically proven to be the smartest animals since they get the nutritional value of both and protein. I'm sorry, you can supplement it with soy all you want, but there's nothing like eating a good steak that also has its own proteins and amino acids and all that stuff. It can't be supplemented.
No, it can't. It can't be supplemented. It has its own build to it. Sorry, I had to stop for a minute to hit this. So, what was I getting at? What's I guess kind of fascinating here is. I forget where I was. What were we talking about? I just kind of lost my train of thought here.
Oh, sorry. We were talking about your brother and how he became a vegan and how he restricted. You know, he put a lot of restrictions on himself back in the day, but he's kind of
right
back
well,
now.
From the moment that he chose to become a vegan, he started causing shit at all kinds of family gatherings. Of course, the whole rest of my family is, you know, they're all omnivore. Some leaning more towards one side and others leaning more towards the other side, but still eating everything. But he would protest the fact that there was a dead turkey on the table. So he came to Thanksgiving with the negative attitude that he was not going to have a good time to begin with because there was a bird's carcass on the table. And
he came to Thanksgiving being unthankful. That's hilarious.
So, you know, not where I'm not knocking him because I understand it and I appreciate why he chose what he did. You know, he actually chose this lifestyle not to match his tastes but to suit his ideals or principles, which I've always found admirable for somebody to give up something that they love as much as he used to love the double bacon cheeseburgers. You know, he gave those up because, well, he saw some pedo videos where, you know, they were shooting cows in the head with a nail gun, and he thought, you know, he thought, how horrible.
Interesting.
So it's his definition that he placed on himself that decided that, you know, his conflict with the person on the opposite end of the spectrum and their definitions wouldn't get along. It wasn't, you know, that the two of them wouldn't get along to begin with. It's because how he defined himself, he felt was contrary to how the person that he was interacting with defined themselves.
You know, I think at this point of the show, I think it's very appropriate to mention solipsism. I believe especially with most people in the left-hand path being Satanists, solipsism, as LaVey has put it down, is one of the satanic sins, thinking that other people should think the same way that you do.
Yeah, that's an obvious fail. I mean, honestly, I don't want to... I mean, I don't even know if the idea originated with LaVey, but I know that that's the first place that I heard it, but, I mean, before that, I always thought that it was an obvious fail. To assume that the person across from you is having the same emotional standpoint and thinking that you're coming from is to fail. It's to not realize that we are all individual creatures.
Right. So, and I think that it's the biggest, like, within the right-hand path, choose any religion you want within the right-hand path, but that's been the biggest fail, you know, like, missionaries going out and trying to convert everybody, trying to get everybody on the same page. It's like, I've always seen, even when I was a Christian in my youth, you know, I've always seen, like, you know, you can't do that because you've got too many people with too many individual ideas. And also, you got to take into account nature versus nurture. I mean, like, what may work for the rich son's, you know, the bureaucratic, you know, kid that just inherited everything is not going to work well for the kid that grew up in the ghetto.
Right on. Right. Naga's offering an alternative definition to solipsism. I personally have, as far as I've ever understood this, it is the assumption that, well, at least the way that LaVey painted it, it is the assumption that the people around you think the same as you do and believe the same as you do and therefore should come to the same conclusions that you do. So maybe I'm misunderstanding this, or Or maybe we're just going at a definition that's not applicable to the conversation right now. But what I'm describing is that particular event. Give it whatever name you want. So.
Right. Well, I mean, it plays a huge role in personalities. Some personalities haven't, like, it's funny because I've even noticed some people within left-hand path whose personalities have not developed to the point where they can't understand, hey, well, you don't see things. It's like, you see things differently. Some people have not reached that. They think, oh, well, we're Satanists, we're elitists, we're on the same page. And I think this is where you and I agree that elitism fails for that reason, because elitism is like, we're all on the same page, and it's like, well, this is the left-hand path, it's individualistic, how can we all be on the same page if, you know, the emphasis is on individual?
Yeah, and those are the kinds of silly questions that I think are never really answered, so, you know, interesting to me. So it's what's very interesting to me, and I know that you probably can't see this, but in the chat room there's actually a it seems to be a male female discussion and you know, comparing, I guess that's the only real descriptor that is, I don't know, primary? Well, no, I'm sure there are several that are primary, but the male-female descriptors are not, you know, something we choose. It's a thing that we're born with. It's a genetic, you know, definition that happens, so.
That is an excellent point that is brought up. In fact, that leads us into another complete different direction. Like, for example, you have male and female. You have heterosexuals, you have homosexuals, and you have transsexuals. That opens it up to a whole new, you know, discussion.
Right on. I don't know. Hang on one second, Matt. I don't know. It's probably somebody for a gift card or something.
Okay.
All right. So, okay, I'm back. I've recently started a new type of business, and so this business is something I'm doing on my off time. So far it's been successful. I've only actually had a couple transactions, but each time the profit margin has been at least 20%. Let me go ahead. I'm going to bring Naga Siva on the line right now. Naga?
All right.
Hello?
Naga.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Oh, great. Thank you. I have an alternative. I don't know what LaVey expressed as an idea about solipsism, but my examination of it, which is extending from European philosophy primarily, is that solipsism is the philosophical position that only oneself exists, and the entirety of the apparent universe is generated by oneself as one understands it.
Right.
So to think about someone else being anything like what you are is unimportant because they're a figment of your construction.
Right. I understand how that's solved, but I thought the actual act itself was assuming that they were the same as you because they're your own construction.
I don't think I understand.
What I mean is that in your mind, because you're the perceiver, everything that you perceive works the way that you think that it works. You know, like people draw general conclusions to things and how they happen. As a child, before I even understood how weather worked, I knew that when the sky turned a certain color, it was going to rain. And to me, if something were to happen where that sky did turn that color, but it didn't rain, that would have thrown a complete loophole, or not loophole, but it would have thrown a complete monkey wrench in my perception of how things occurred at that point in time. I'd have to, you know, now backtrack and come up with a new idea as to now the pattern is not if the sky turns this color, it rains, but now it is if the sky turns this color, most of the time it rains, but it can happen without it raining. It adds more to the definition, but it's still working the way that I think that it should work.
I guess what I don't understand is how you're conceiving that solipsism is reducible to anything material or analytical. The reason I say that is because the sky, for example, is a construction of my mind. You are a construction of my mind. My perceptions are a construction of my mind. Everything is a construction of my mind. Therefore, any sort of analysis about that becomes secondary to the fact that my experience is completely constructed by me, and all of it's some sort of drama that I'm making up. I'm not saying that this is real. I'm saying that this is a philosophical position that is irreducible and unassailable. And so I don't understand how LaVey's discussion about different people, because since they're all constructions of my mind, is of any relevance.
Well, it was only relevant specifically to what the whole show is talking about, and that's conflicting personalities and, you know, different personality types.
But why is solipsism part of that? I mean, go ahead.
Because that's the way that I perceived it being described when he described it.
Well, you know, I have a question for Nagasiva, in the sense that if everything is, you know, assuming, you know, taking the stance, if everything is a construction of one's own mind, then how does one go about solving personality conflicts?
By writing another script.
Okay, can you give me an example?
Well, the problem is that your levels of empowerment within it aren't usually analyzed by those who put forward this this hypothesis. I mean, the people who construct ideas about solipsism usually don't think it out very clearly. That was the reason why I mentioned Raymond Smullyan as part of the chat, that it came up as a subject, because he has actually put forward an idea about enlightened solipsism, which is a better thought-out model of how to engage that hypothesis in the world. Your question is a really good one, and you might posit various powers or levels of ability to influence the world. For example, if I'm creating everything, then how much can I influence what it is that I'm creating, is the second question there. And if you ask me that question, I could say, well, I will just make it different. I will write a different script about how this drama, which is unfolding, will occur. And so if it comes about in some way I don't like, that's my problem.
Yes,
you know, I recall something that you had said that goes along the same lines in one of your videos about the 93 current that carries me, which I think that falls along the same lines, seeing as how one thinks that it is my true will to do this and that, but the problem is personality conflict, and Aleister Crowley himself fell into that trap.
Yeah, as much as someone gets upset about it, then you can say that they're not at cause.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, please.
No. I just said okay. I'm listening here. What I'm still trying to get at is how anybody could come to determine that everything that they see is a construct of their own mind. We might have a constructed interpretation that happens within our mind, but I'm telling you right now that if a bus hits me, it's going to hurt, and no matter how I write the script, it's still going to turn out that same way. It's going to hurt.
Well, that's because you're identifying with an animal that I think is the reality, as compared to identifying with all of your perceptual universe, which is a philosophical position without real foundation. I agree with you. I think that it is ultimately a fantasy that is merely hypothetically difficult to deconstruct. It is not an actuality.
Okay, then in that case, all right, I understand now, because I was just going, wait a minute. I mean, I guess we could start with the fact that I'm really not so much a dualist of any kind. I don't think that there's any kind of separation in, you know, the materials of man. It's all one working unit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the focus of this show then would resolve to possibly what kinds of people are involved in the left-hand path and whether or not very many are capable of conflict resolution or persuasion so that the obvious problems that are between people can be resolved.
Right on. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the thing of it is that, again, the conflict happens because of your own personal descriptors. You know, what you describe, you know, as the, you know, your levels, your limits, your lines. Conflict starts there, so I don't really know, you know, if a personality type really does you any good other than, you know, maybe to go, well, wait a minute, this is my downfall. You know, but then you're just accepting whatever it is that you've outlined as being your personality.
Right, so, and that falls into the category of becoming a crutch.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it could be a crutch for one thing and a positive for another. For example, and as I understand it, or as I've experienced people in the left-hand path, they're often individualists and often transgressors and pioneers. And so those kinds of people who may be quite successful at pioneering or at advancing and making innovation may be very bad at cooperation and collaborative effort.
Sure. All right, I understand that. I don't know, there's something kind of interesting in my mind then. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Enneagram personality system. But it was something that Gurdjieff came up with, you know, supposedly came up with. I've never seen anything he wrote himself about this, but, you
right.
know.
Right, through Ouspensky, right?
Actually, I don't even think it was Ouspensky. I think that it originated with another guy. His name starts with an M. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. I'd have to go look it up.
Okay.
But anyways, this guy stated that Gurdjieff said there were 8 true personalities in this world, and each person had some variant of all 8 of those personalities, but it would be dominant by one thing. And it, the only thing that I really found interesting about it was that you could go through different stages to experience that particular personality, that because you yourself were, you know, some combination of all 8 of those personalities, that by, you know, changing your world construct, you know, from I like peanuts to I don't like peanuts, could change the entire way that you think about things and shift you over to another personality type. So, I guess I'm just kind of thinking to myself that this is sort of what we do anyways, as we learn to interact with other people and other things, as we figure out that, oh, wait a minute, I can't do this, I have to change that. Or we don't figure it out, and we conflict with the person, and one goes one way, one goes the other, or they fight, or whatever the outcome is. So,
I have a couple of comments about that. One of them is that I think you're talking about the Enneagram, and you mentioned that there were 8 personalities, but there are actually 9. I think, like, the Ennead and Ennea relates to 9 things rather than 8.
No, the 9th and the 1st are the same, so they're counted as that the 9th is the end of one cycle and the beginning of another, because it, the way that he described it was in an Enneagram regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the personality on an Enneagram, because that's locked, that's fixed to one set of 8. But in the Enneagram, normally, you could rise or flow through or fall through the first and 8th of the Enneagram. So you could either go up levels or down levels. You could move through, but no person was supposed to be able to move beyond two either way, is the way it breaks down. At least this is my study so far on it.
So the first and the eighth are somehow coincident?
Yeah, I believe that they're both pulled off as being intellect. One is intellect and the other is higher intellect. So that's where the rise and fall happens.
Mm-hmm. It's somewhat very similar in some ways to an octave where you have seven things and the first moves up to the next level and that's the eighth.
Exactly.
The next octave.
Right. Well, it actually was called the law of octave, yes. So.
Huh.
You
know what? Actually, something occurred to me as we were talking about this. I wonder how much that, if you gentlemen feel free, this is kind of a free-for-all question. It's kind of going off topic, but, you know, we'll go back on. I wonder how much that octave system, the Enneagram system, has to do with what David Myatt would call the Aeonic Side Rule.
The thing of it is that the octave system is very similar to several different other esoteric understandings. I mean, I think that all esoteric understandings kind of have common qualities because the type of people that are working in them are, I don't know, study common materials. But, you know, you think about... The Kabbalah kind of does the same type of thing. You can rise and fall through different sephirot, I'm thinking Myatt's system is similar to that too. Gurdjieff said that each of these symbols that we break down like this are all imperfect versions of this Enneagram. That was what Gurdjieff's spin was on it. So.
Right, and a lot of times, and this, you know, it's very good that we're bringing this up, because a lot of times I see people, specifically, I mean, I'll go ahead and name New Agers, you know, not specific by name, but a lot of New Agers that are big into the Kabbalah just kind of fall on that as a crutch rather than look at it as a tool for higher understanding.
In the same way, one might say that the constructions by left-hand path people of the social networks that they hope will endorse them could be constructions that they can learn from or that we can learn from. So if I pioneer something, some system or whatnot, and it generates a social network around me, I may then begin to conflict with it, and it becomes my challenge to operate harmoniously with a bunch of strange and different people than myself.
Right. I think that tends to happen. That's when your ideas change, when you change your mind, so to speak, on things. So,
Would you then shift through the personality types you're talking about with respect to the Enneagram?
Yes, at that point you would be shifting, yes. You would be moving up to whatever the next... note is on the octave, or moving down away from it. It's kind of a free flowing system. It's not something that you like have to do sequentially.
Well, the aspect we haven't really talked about a lot was the notion of aggression as compared to pliability or whatever, passivity, and its relation to all of this. And there are absolute advantages in some systems. Marshall, for example, in becoming passive, in moving with certain kinds of aggression in a way that is not directly opposing them, but moving out of their way and redirecting them and in some manner not being aggressive as an advantage.
I think that constitutes a lot of personality clashes too. When some people say, well, you're not being passive enough, or, you know, you're not being aggressive enough, excuse me. You're not being aggressive enough, you're being too passive. And be like, well, you're just being an asshole. You know, I think there's definitely... something to be said for that.
I haven't noticed in the left-hand path exposition and broadcast an emphasis on passivity. One person who I have noticed mention it, and I liked it very much, was I've forgotten his street name, but he goes by the name of Zeitgeist or Zeit23Geist. And he puts out really, really interesting videos of very psychedelic, and he's all over the map in terms of what he expresses, but he did have something he called satanic yoga. And it was one of the things that he emphasized, to be passive and to be really to move with the natural world. But more often I've seen in Ford and others something expressing predatory and aggressive stances with respect to the world and other people.
Right on.
Is this a good idea? I mean, is identification with wolves and not sheep an advantage, especially if you have another value for things like community building or cooperation or coalition? It seems to me it might be a disadvantage to emphasize the things that are aggressive.
I think all things in their balance. I think there are certain things that, Beast's formula for success, weighing the benefits is what you must do, knowing when to be passive and knowing when to be aggressive, and kind of ignoring the personalities, as they exist, just kind of taking them in for yourself. Knowing how to apply it for yourself is really...
May I be a member of this conversation for just a moment?
I feel to apply it. And, of course, there's no right or wrong way to answer that.
There was a request. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
There was a request by my beloved wife and guru to join the conversation, and so she's come to the computer and wanted to say something.
Okay, that's good.
Welcome back to the show, Kat.
This is Kat Ironwood. Being a person who has studied biology and zoology in particular for years, I heard this conversation, and I wanted to comment on something about people's belief that there is a difference between wolves and sheep. Both wolves and sheep are easily domesticated by humans. And in these metaphors, the idea of a god substitutes for the human. So wolves, which are dogs are wolves. Anybody who tells you they're a different species is just simply ignorant of zoology. Wolves are a pack animal that hunts and kills because they're a carnivore. They have a very strong pack bonding, and any human can insert themselves into a wolf pack and, eventually find wolves that will follow them. Sheep are a pack animal that is an herbivore. They have very strong male leaders. This is why Aries the ram is this, logical and zodiacal archetype of this very aggressive male. And I've raised sheep. I've raised big flocks of sheep. And sheep also will allow a human to insert themselves as a sort of super sheep. But this has led to the idea, because Jews who wrote the Tanakh were shepherds, they didn't have wolves particularly, they were shepherds, and they talked about the good shepherd. And so Satanists tend to think of wolves as good, sheep are bad because sheep are stupid. And I'll admit that sheep are not as intelligent as wolves, but that's the major difference between them. They each have a defensive system and a pack system into which people can insert themselves. And so I just am speaking on behalf of sheep here, because I heard Nagashiva producing, fucking, having babies, doing all the things that other, mammals do. But they have a structure into which people can insert themselves. But people have much more corrupted the wolf system. Look at all the little dogs that we keep as pets. Very few people keep sheep as pets. So really, when you think about it, the wildness of sheep has been preserved greatly compared to the wildness of wolves. That was it. I just wanted to speak up on behalf of true zoology instead of fantasy zoology. I apologize for hijacking your thoughts for a moment. I'm going to be quiet now.
Couple of things, Kat. I completely agree with you that it really comes down to what the aim is, what you're going for. I think that's pretty much, you know, how that works out is that wolves, their aim is to go get meat. So they behave a certain way because they have to behave that way to eat. And then you pointed out that sheep are herbivores, so they don't have to have that aggressive nature to them. You know, they can just reach down and eat the grass. So their aim's different, and
right.
So their behavior is different because of that. I think the same thing is applied in allegorical sense when you place it to man. It depends on what you're trying to achieve, how you'll behave, and I believe that's how people can slide through this personality thing that I was talking about, this personality model, and move through different personality types. That's why we don't have all these true definable qualities. You know, you can't go to me and say, I'm a Sagittarius, I'm definitely philosophical, I'm definitely religious, I'm this or I'm that, because there are points in which I'm not.
Mm-hmm. I guess what it is I see this, a lot of people who like the wild, for instance, in Earth First has a big deal about wolves versus poodles, but poodles are wolves. Their idea is that wolves are the true wild and poodles are these, you know, stupid animals that have been sort of primped up. And, you know, and I look at this stuff and I hate to see metaphor taking over people's thinking. It's better to think directly. The same, like, people talk about the mass monkey mind. There is no mass monkey mind. This is just using animals as metaphors on which to hang a concept and talk about, you know, the sheep-like nation, or that people are like lemmings, that they can be led. All of these metaphors are miss the mark. They are missing the mark because they really are minimizing our differences from those other animals. I mean, we're just a bunch of chimpanzees, okay, or, you know, some sort of vague chimpanzee species, and we have our own way of being. And there are people who want to be independent of the caging system. I call civilization the large caging system. But it's our own self-inflicted caging system. There's so much variation among the chimps compared to, say, among sheep, most of whom behave somewhat similarly, or wolves, most of whom behave somewhat similarly. There's a lot of variation in chimp life, and so we have this caging system in which we cage our own young, and we cage our own friends, and we cage our own enemies. And what
right,
I would
and those cagings could be seen as categorizations.
Yes, well, yes, I mean them also literally. Like, you go to university, that's a cage. Or, you know, you live in a tenement in this little apartment, that's a cage. Or you live, you know, you shop at this mall. These are caging systems so we don't live in the wild. And
I like about the metaphors that you use is that they use metaphors in and of themselves are caged, but they're caged in order to bring a higher understanding.
Well, or to convince people that metaphors are also used as an argumentation form, and as such, they can be picked apart by showing that they're inapplicable, which is what I was trying to say with wolves versus sheep. I see so many young people, and myself, watching all my life, people saying, I don't want to be a sheep. And I'm like, huh, okay, what do you want to be? I want to be a wolf. Okay.
Or goat.
Some people say, I want to be a goat. Well, I've raised goats, too, and I've raised dogs. And why don't you try to be a guinea fowl? Have you ever checked out a guinea fowl compared to chickens? Guinea fowl are these really intelligent birds that are real aggressive. But, you know, you don't ever hear these, you know, people going, I want to be a guinea fowl. But check it out.
I want to be a platypus.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
guys, we've got just about a minute left, so we're going to have
to shut up. Thanks for letting me rant. Bye.
Thanks for joining us. I really did appreciate her input there. I don't want to be rude, but, you know, the show is coming to an end, and I do have stuff I have to do right after, so I can't extend it today. We could do a offshoot show of this sometime in the near future to kind of continue on this discussion. I think we were getting somewhere productive. In the meantime, that's it, man. Thanks, everybody, for coming out and tuning in. Those of you who left early, you missed out. That's it. I'm ready to go.
All right, people. Have a great Saturday.
Yeah.
My pleasure. Bye. Thank you. Namaste.
Take us home, Beast.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dad Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?